life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. Bring me to hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and welcome to an episode that I never thought we'd be doing, courtesy of Mr. Larry Moorman. And speaking of Larry, podbrother from More of the Same Network, the network that I'm secretly taking over, Retro Gamers Podcast, better half and the yin and the yang. Please help me in welcoming Mr. Larry Moorman.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? I love being on the show. Great to be back. Great to be a recurring character on the show. You know, it's I kind of feel like I'm the Larry from Three's Company. Now I'm the Larry on Victims and Villains.
No,
no,
no. If I had to compare you to like a pop culture, since I got this going on right now.
Oh, that's a wubba wubba.
Yeah, the Pickle Rick mug.
Pickle Rick.
I would say that you're probably like the little cat Scrunches. Is that I can't remember. Scrunchy.
Oh, Scrunch? Yeah. Scrunchy? Yeah. I am very upset because, real quick, out here on Long Island where I live, they had a con out here. I think it was Cradle Con, it was called. Cradle of Aviation Museum. Retro Gamers have actually done a couple shows from there. And Dan Harmon was at the show, and I had no idea. And I'd just gotten the Pickle Rick exclusive pop vinyl. I'm not far from Cradle at all. So,
man, that's a missed opportunity right there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Story of my life. So, definitely. But I'll get him next time. Hopefully, he'll be at New York Comic Con, as I will be there on Saturday for anyone else who may be there.
So we have no idea when this is going to be dropping. This is one thing that we're calling a rainy day episode, and we're here today talking about what?
Well, first of all, I was at New York Comic Con then, depending on when this dropped. We're talking, and you know, you presented me with the topic. You're like, pick whatever topic you want. And I could have gone video games, but I already do a podcast about that. We've done it. I could have gone wrestling, but Brandon's not with us, and you would be very bored. So I decided to do the other kind of love of my life, or at least it used to be a love of my life, because it's not really predominant anymore. Game shows.
Yes. And so, like, I was trying to, like, look up a little bit of, like, history behind it, like, what is kind of gone on. And I feel like game shows are that area of pop culture that used to, at one point, was very predominant in family households. Because growing up in, like, the 60s and the 70s, and somewhat even the 80s, you had, predominantly, like, one channel or, like, three or four channels, and like most families only had like one TV. Like they even there's that one line in Back to the Future when he's in the 50s, the first one, where he's telling the little brother, hey, I have two TVs. He's like, oh, this guy must be rich. And the mom's like, oh, no one has two TVs. So like these game shows were a staple, I feel like, of family entertainment. And like, they still exist, but they just look different now.
You're right. They do exist. It's not, to me, personally, you know, it's definitely not the same. Because a lot of the game shows now are, some of them are, which is cool, like Rehash, like they have Match Game. They have, I think Pyramid is still on. I forgot who's hosting it, but I think Pyramid may still be on. But then you have more, like, you know, Beat Shazam. And I think Millionaire may still be on as well. But and those are fun. But, you know, I remember when I was younger, which is kind of why I wanted to talk about it. I just remember they just used to be like a block of game shows. I mean, now there are two networks dedicated to it. The Game Show Network and Buzzer. Buzzer I find actually more entertaining than Game Show Network. And not only that, if you have Amazon Prime, they do have a lot of the old from the 70s. They have a lot of old game shows, which we'll talk about. We'll get into it in a little bit. If you wanted to see what, and I don't mean this in a bad way, if you wanted to see how culture was, how society was at a given time in history, watch a game show, because it really tells like just how life was during that era, whether it be, you know, just what comedy was like, what was okay, what was PC before PC was even invented. It's a wild trip sometimes. It's a blast every time.
It was, and it totally is. And so, like, I don't know if you knew this or not, but talking about, like, current game shows, I feel like a lot of the game shows that we've kind of gone into are transpired into, like, that Beat Shazam kind of mentality. So you had Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader years ago, American Idol, Bachelor, Bachelorette. And, like, this is just kind of how we've taken the game show format and moved it on. But I'm kind of curious if you knew this or not. Speaking of like classic game shows being revived, they are bringing back, or they're getting ready to, by the time this drops, The Gong Show.
Again?
And the host could or could not be Mike Myers. It sounds like Mike Myers, but it looks like it just doesn't look like him physically.
That's already been on.
Has it?
Yeah, I forgot what channel it was on. Mike Myers, it was Myers, but he was in costume. He played this fictional character who was the host of The Gong Show. I can't remember the character's name. I don't even think it's on anymore, unfortunately. I think it had a short run. And they've tried bringing back The Gong Show a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah.
And The Gong Show was fun because it had that goofiness. It had real, like, contestants. And it had your silly contestants. I mean, I think he just died within the last year, Gene the Dancing Machine. I mean, you know, growing up in the 70s, well, hold on, I didn't grow up in the 70s, but I saw reruns. You know, in the 70s, that was like the hottest thing going on TV. And it was just some guy who came out who called himself Gene the Dancing Machine. Got gonged every time.
I see, like, when I think of The Gong Show, like, obviously I didn't grow up. Like, I caught reruns on Game Show Network. But I feel like Gong Show was one of those things that probably was famous for one of the most famous Gong Show, I guess, skits or like acts was the Popsicle Twins.
They sang with their belly buttons?
No, yeah, two girls that literally, so they were two girls or they were twins, but they just came out with popsicles and just sucked on the popsicles.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, you wanted to, what you can get away with on television. You know, it's that, you know, it was kind of that either double entendre, innuendo, whatever you want to call it. But I remember The Gong Show, and a lot of game shows, actually, I feel like had their run in the 70s and 80s, died out a little bit, and then they kind of brought them back sometimes in the 90s. Because growing up, I was born in 1980. So growing up, I remember The Gong Show from like the early 90s, where they would do stuff like they tried to jazz it up a little bit. And I feel like we may be doing this with a lot of game shows. If you don't know what The Gong Show is, basically it was three celebrities with a gong behind them. You had this act come on the stage and perform. If they like you, you're good. If they didn't like you, any one of the celebrities would just get up and hit the gong, and that's you getting off the stage. And like I was saying before, some of the acts were just zany. But in the 90s, they like tried to jazz it up. Like they would put the, what do you call it, mallet, wand, or whatever you want to call it. Like the contestant would have it, and the celebrity would chase the contestant around the studio stage trying to get the gong from it. Like they just tried to make it a little different. And of course, we all know the original host of The Gong Show was a CIA operative who went out on many missions and probably had record number of kills for the CIA that no one should know about because it's all special ops. They actually made a movie about that, too.
Yeah, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. And I had never heard of The Gong Show until that movie. Yep. And so that was kind of my introduction into The Gong Show and just the wild and zany atmosphere that show did, and Barry's story, like, alone, like, whether or not it's a true thing, like, because I don't think it's ever been conclusively proven, you know, with the CIA, obviously, it's never going to be a...
It's top secret.
Yeah, it's never going to be a, oh, yeah, oh, no, but if anyone was, like, if anyone kind of came from this genre of entertainment, Chuck Berry, just, like, there's an electricity about him when he would kind of come on, and I feel like even now, like, game shows, like, you talked about the game shows being timeless or like a time capsule of their time, and even the way that we as a culture have looked at them growing through the years, take a Happy Gilmore, where you had Bob Barker cameo.
Classic.
And that Bob Barker scene is probably one of the most priceless and timeless scenes in that whole movie, but it also at the same time it shows and demonstrates that as a culture in the 90s, you know, we embrace those a little bit more. It was kind of, I mean, yes, they were kind of fading, but at that time, they were still household names where you could hear Bob Barker and you immediately think Price is Right.
Oh, absolutely. I remember whenever I was sick and stayed home from school, one of the benefits of that was being able to watch The Price is Right at noon. It was either 11 o'clock or noon. It came on every day. Come on down is a classic line. In fact, a little cross promotion when we did the Better Half podcast. At one point, I had my cousin was on, and we do these questions to guests, just random questions. And one of them is, "What's your favorite TV catchphrase?" And his is, "Come on down." You know, Price is Right. It goes without saying. I got a great story about that in a moment. But you know, Bob Barker. What made that moment funny in Happy Gilmore? First of all, he did or does. Still study karate. Like, he's a legit, I'm not gonna say a black belt, but he studied karate. And not only that, I am gonna go into this just for a moment. Don't worry, I'm not gonna focus on it, but he, for a little while, Monday Night Raw, WWE was doing guest hosts, celebrity guest hosts. They would come on to promote whatever they were promoting, and Bob Barker came on Monday Night Raw one time, and he did, like, for a segment, he did The Price is Right with the wrestlers, and he had such a memorable interaction with one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I mean, you have Hulk Hogan, and then right underneath Hogan for me is Chris Jericho, and it's hysterical. As Jericho comes out in his wrestling tights, no shirt, and he's still wearing the name sticker, like they do on The Price is Right. They had the board set up on the bottom, and Jericho gets into a tiff with Bob Barker. And I can't remember if it was him or maybe another wrestler backstage, like Bob Barker just karate chops the guy. And Barker was able to riff because it was pretty much unscripted, you know, as far as like how they would produce it. And it was really good. If you ever get a chance, look it up on YouTube. It's actually, to me, it's really funny. It was called The Price is Raw. And it was a great segment. Bob Barker won Host of the Year at the Slammies. So it was really, really cool. And the other famous thing from Bob Barker is have your pets spayed or neutered. That happened at the end of every episode. What I want to mention real quick, and I just want to say this, Drew Carey is continuing the legacy of that show, doing a tremendous job. I really haven't been able to catch much of the Drew Carey era, but he's definitely doing a great job. He still has that long, thin microphone for some reason that Bob Barker was famous for.
Well, I think that that's a signature of the show. At this point.
It was a say only two shows I remember had that weird thin microphone. That and Match Game with Gene Rayburn during the 70s, which was a whole circus unto itself on Match Game. But with The Price is Right, what I remember, and there was some memorable games on The Price is Right. Not even the pricing game or the showcase showdown. Side note, I got to tie it in. Great version of The Price is Right is on the Wii. If you ever find it, there's like two versions, a regular and like an updated version. And with the Wiimote, it's really interactive, how you get to play the games, spin the wheel, things like that. It's actually really cool. There's a game, and it was funny because I was just talking about this with some people recently. I don't know how much you remember of The Price is Right, like the different games that they would have. Right, they had Plinko, which was famous. They had, the key one, Punch It. There was a game called Cliffhanger or Cliffhanger. I think it was called Cliffhanger. It was a little climber, and you would have to guess, you know, the price of, you know, a toaster. And if you get it right, you know, you move up. Or if you get it wrong, he moves up the number distance between your guess and the right answer. And what happens is when he moves up, he yodeled. And he would go, yo-dee-doo-dee-do-dee-doo-dee-do-dee-do. And it's this little guy just going up, going up, going up. And you don't know. The thing was, you didn't know how far off you were until he stopped. Now, the kicker of this is, at one point, to lose the game, he'll go over the cliff. So if it's too far, he'll yodel. But then when he goes over the cliff, you hear him go, like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, crashes. And you hear this crash at the bottom of the whatever it was. I used to cry when this game came on because it scared the living Jesus out of me. I mean, I was terrified for the little man who kept falling over the cliff. And I'm not even exaggerating when I said I couldn't even get to the TV quick enough to change a channel when I started hearing that yodel. It was terrifying to me.
Oh my goodness.
It wasn't until years later when I finally got over it. But I remember as a young kid, I mean, crying because I did not want to. The yodeling scared me and him falling off the cliff scared me. I was such a wimp when I was a baby, when I was a child. Oh, it was terrible.
I mean, not to, you know, cross platforms here, but you did like the Virtual Boy.
I love that. What do you mean did?
So we've talked about Gong Show. We've talked about Price is Right. We've talked about cultural impact. What were some of your favorite game shows growing up as a kid? Since we grew up in two different eras,
I think that
we might have some like difference, but I think that we have some similarities at the same time.
I think, and in fact, I think some of the similarities may even be possibly the same show, but like maybe redone later in time where they kind of changed it up a little bit. And one of them, I'll give an example. I remember growing up, I loved Hollywood Squares. One of my favorites. You know, and when I was growing up, like Joan Rivers was like the permanent center square. And I used to love when the Muppets were on because like you'd actually have the Muppets playing Hollywood Squares. They'd always have the lower square. Every once in a while, if they had like a musical act, they would extend the lower left square to fit like three or four people in the booth. So that was always a fun one. And these were ones that like I watched, me and my parents watched as a family. You have your Jeopardy, you have your Wheel of Fortune. My absolute favorite, even to this day, game show of all time is Press Your Luck. Ooh, absolute.
That sounds familiar.
Hold on. I'm going to do something right now that will go, you go, Press Your Luck. No whammy, no whammy, no whammy, no whammy. Stop.
That's it. Yeah.
That's it. I loved that show. One of my favorite game show of all time, mostly because of the whole whammy thing. Again, the game is available on the Wii. And it's the whole same situation. You get the board. You know, you have to stop the buzzer and everything. Besides that, and there's a great story about Press Your Luck where the guy, there was a contestant on the show that basically broke the bank and figured out the board, actually figured out
what?
The pattern.
Really?
You never heard about this?
No.
Oh man, big time. Forgive me. I can't remember the player's name and again, like I said, I feel like we're going to be describing this. With Press Your Luck, what happened was you have three contestants. And there's first set of trivia questions. By answering the trivia questions, that determines the number of spins you have on the board. And the board was about, I don't know, 8, 16, 32, a bunch of squares around. And it would just randomly go all over the place. You hit stop, you win money, you win prizes, you win trips. And the idea is to build up the cash, like the prize value of all that. The whole thing saying no whammy, no whammy, no whammy is if you hit a whammy, you lose all your money. And when you hit a whammy, you get this cool kind of graphic, like this animation on the bottom that takes your money away. Very funny. Peter DeBarkin, he was the host.
And it looks like, because I remember Press Your Luck. Press Your Luck was one of my favorites growing up. And the whammies that they would use, he almost kind of looked like a darker version of Crash Bandicoot going across the screen.
Okay, I can see that. All righty.
Ooh.
So, you know, we press your luck to go back to the guy who basically broke the bank. Can't remember the gentleman's name, but he basically what he was doing was, as the story goes, he was one of these guys who wanted to get rich quick, always trying. It was almost like he was a Ralph Cramden, trying to find quick ways to make money. And I forgot what he was trying to sell something originally, wasn't working. He was spending a lot of his family's money. So, you know, he would be watching Press Your Luck. And what happened was he would watch Press Your Luck. I think he may have even watched it like every episode for a year straight. He would tape every episode and he would actually study the board, because not only does the cursor move, but the pictures that it would land on would move as well. So you have two randomizers, the cursor itself and the spot that it can land on. So he studied this for possibly a year straight, and he figured out that there was a pattern to the board, to the point where he was able to predict where the part would go next. Fast forward, he gets on the show. Obviously, he didn't tell anybody about what he figured out. He gets on the show. He gets through the question and answer part. Now, that you really can't. It's, you know the answer, you don't know. And the answers are always multiple choice. So now it's his turn to play. I believe the producers told the contestants, because every contestant would always go, no whammy, no whammy, no whammy, no whammy, stop, and then hit the buzzer. That was their catch. That was their shtick. So, you know, it wasn't required. They just did it for TV. This guy didn't do that. You could actually see on his face he was watching the board, and he was trying to figure it out. And he lasted about, because the champion would always come back. I think he lasted about 4 days. He won. Now, this is back in the early 80s, maybe mid 80s. He won over $100,000, which back then was ridiculous to give away on a game show, to the point where they quote unquote retired him and said he's just going to go out as their grand champion, because they could not, they didn't know what he was doing. But when you watch him, you see his eyes, and the two or three times he hit a whammy, some people just go, oh, darn, you know, ah, boo. He get frustrated. Like, he was mad at himself because he got the whammy. And they couldn't pinpoint him cheating. They could not figure out. And then by the time they realized what he was doing, he technically wasn't breaking the rules. So they retire him as champion. They force the programmer to completely redo the board to an actual randomizing algorithm, which then no one could predict because it was completely random. But it really threw the whole game in a tizzy. The producers didn't know what to do. I think Comedy Central did like a special on it, or Game Show Network did a special on it a long, long, long time ago. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube.
Wow, that's insane. Oh, it's
yeah.
Like, I just remember the only thing that like that existed in my time was Ken Jennings, the guy yes. that was on Jeopardy for like what, like 3 weeks, a month, or something like that.
A month, I think more than that. And Jeopardy had just changed the rules. Back in the day, you can be champion 5 days in a row. If you were champion 5 days in a row, that was it. You were done. You would come back for their tournament of champions, but that was it. They had just changed the rules saying that champions can stay as long as they keep winning. And it probably wasn't a month after they changed it that Ken Jennings showed up and just ran the board.
Oh, yeah. See, like Jeopardy was like the one game show that like I just couldn't watch growing up because it just made me feel stupid.
It was a little much. Yeah.
And but when you're talking about Jeopardy, I think a lot of people go to Alex Trebek, and he is probably he was the main host for that. I don't know if he still does it or not.
Oh, he does. He wasn't the original host, but he's been the host for the longest time.
He's been that guy yep. that most people know. But my introduction to Alex Trebek was Will Ferrell and Norm MacDonald on SNL.
Wow. That's a heck of an intro. I mean, those skits were some of the best skits Saturday Night Live did back when it was actually good. Celebrity Jeopardy, Will Ferrell. No, not it was Will Ferrell and Norm MacDonald did a couple of them, but it was him and oh my gosh, Hammond.
Norm MacDonald. Norm MacDonald was the one that I remember the most because he would do Burt Reynolds.
He would, but no, who played Sean Connery?
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
What's his name? Oh, my. Hammond. Daryl Hammond.
Yeah.
Daryl Hammond. Because he was, him and Will Ferrell were the consistent ones that were on every Celebrity Jeopardy. Some of the funniest, well-written, just quirks. And some of those questions, I mean, I can't even repeat some of them here, but there's one that comes to mind that is hysterical. I'll just say the question. I won't say the answer, but, you know, this is the sound a doggy makes. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
So, oh, nuts.
I think when I was growing up and, like, watching, like, I'd go and back when Blockbuster was still a thing,
mm-hmm.
I probably rented the Best of Will Ferrell's Saturday Night Live DVD and over again.
Absolutely.
Simply to watch that one particular, like, those skits. Like, I didn't care about anything else. And, like, if you guys listened to last year when we had... Better Half, Larry's other show, Takeover. Harry Carey actually made a cameo on our show. And so now, like, every time I think of Harry Carey, I think of Frank.
Oh, you have to. Harry Carey's on the Better Half almost every week. He comes down from the cloud that he ascended to years ago, comes down to visit us. He is in Frank. You know, he takes over Frank and just, you know, Harry Carey's a staple now of the Better Half. And Will Ferrell, that him and I know we're going off topic, but Will Ferrell and from Jurassic Park, Jeff Goldblum, when they were doing the astronomy show or something and Harry Carey was the host, you know, it's like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The moon was made of cheese. Would you eat yourself? You know, I can't even do it justice. So. But yeah, no, you talk about Jeopardy for years. You always have, it was that same block, Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune,
right?
You know, here in New York, I don't know if it's cause it's syndicated. So I don't know if it's the same across the country, but you would have, I think Wheel of Fortune was first at 7 o'clock and then Jeopardy at 7:30 and the shows are still going.
Ours was always switched. So ours would have Wheel of Fortune at 7:00. Jeopardy at 7:30.
Okay. And then for a while they would have AM and PM editions. Like Wheel of Fortune was on in the morning with a different host, and then it would be on at night with Pat Sajak.
And Pat Sajak, I feel like, is one of those, is again, he's like Alex Trebek or Bob Barker, where you just have these familiar hosts where you just go, oh, you know, yeah. And you have they went through how many of like the girls that would like turn over the letters.
Not many. Hold on, not many. Vanna White. She's pretty much short of the times when she was pregnant. It was Vanna.
I've kind of sworn that I read an article years ago where it was like they had numerous, like upwards of probably like 5 to 8 have taken that mantle on over the years.
I think it's maybe when she was pregnant. As far as I know, I don't think she ever had like a contract dispute, unless they use someone again. They had an AM edition of the show, so it could have been someone else. And quite frankly, Pat Sajak, Bob Barker, Alex Trebek, and Vanna got the easiest jobs in the world, because first of all, especially now, Vanna, back in the day, she actually had to physically turn the letters. Now she just presses a button and they just come up digitally. But those games are staples, and I remember having like home editions. Do you remember the home editions of game shows?
Yes, and I remember how bad I sucked at them. But I remember growing up, and you know, you talk about those being the staples. I remember one of the biggest game show, like my introduction to game shows, and just kind of like the storm that was the cultural icon was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with Regis.
That was huge when that came out. That was big.
Exactly,
time.
And. You had the McDonald's game that went with it. You had the digital versions, and like they would release the video game version. They had the board games that went with it, and you look at these, just the cultural like storm that was, and that was it. That was one of the storm, and then what was the other one that the British lady?
The Weakest Link.
Weakest Link.
You are the Weakest Link. Goodbye. Yeah.
Yeah. You just. you look at those game shows, and I guess yes, it's the turn of the new millennia. Like we're looking for new blood, but those shows were my introduction to it. That's when I discovered things like Game Show Network and the Match Game and Press Your Luck.
Match Game.
And
what I love,
I love going back and watching some of the old Match Games because they're so funny.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Charles Nelson Reilly was a household favorite. Him, Brett Butler, always getting into arguments with each other. You had Richard Dawson, hitting on whoever was sitting next to him. And Gene Rayburn just, living the life. And talking about the signs of the times, it was in the 70s. And it was called Match Game 77, Match Game 78. At New Year's, they would actually change, like at the end of the episode, they would change the year on the logo. And Match Game is one of the games you can watch on Amazon Prime. And I was watching, because I love the old shows are fantastic. And I was watching an old episode of Match Game. I can't remember which one, but again, it was the 70s, folks, so you gotta keep this into consideration. So couple of contestants, and what happens is, like, the contestant part would spin around with the new contestant, like, oh, where'd they come from? Who knows? So they would come spin around with the new challenger for the champion. And the champion at the time was this, it was a woman, like a mother of three, just stay-at-home mom, back then in the 70s, they just, stayed home, and did their thing. No frills. The challenger was this blonde-haired, like, big-haired blonde who was, like, a knockout. And Gene Rayburn, on the show, this is on Amazon Prime, basically, literally throws himself at this woman. I mean, he goes, I was like, hey, what's your name? I'm so-and-so. What do you do for a living? Blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden he goes, oh, what's that? It smells like coconut. What is that? She's like, oh, that's my perfume. And he basically, like, gets in front of the chair, like, almost knocks the other woman over, like, get to this other contestant, and pretty much is, like, sniffing her up and down because of the perfume. And, everyone's getting a kick out of this. At one point, he's, like, nibbling on her neck. It's like, oh, we're going to go to commercial. We'll be right back. And they go to commercial, and they come back, and he's, like, sprawled out on the table, like, so what are you doing after the show? it was a free-for-all on Match Game.
Oh.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It was just – it's just nuts. The sign is – there's another one. Actually, I was just watching today. Josh, I sent you the link. Great YouTube channel, Wink Martindale, who was a great host, one of my favorite game shows as well. High Rollers is one of my favorite shows, and me and Ant talked about it on the Retro Gamers, one of the best games on the Commodore 64. They were talking about, it was some dumb show called Celebrity Bingo. I think it was like a pilot. Oh, it was terrible. And Dick Sargent was the celebrity. He was one of the Darrens on Bewitched. And he was talking about how he was doing some help for the Special Olympics. But in the 70s, they didn't call it Special Olympics. So, they would use a term that's not so PC today. But back then, they threw it around like it was water. And it was just, and again, it wasn't meant to be rude. It wasn't meant, it was just, that's why it was. That was just what it was. And it was just weird to hear that. And that's what I mean by signs of the times.
Yeah, and I could feel that. Like, and like I said earlier, like the way that we have approached the genre of game shows as a whole, like it's a lot more broader and it's a lot bigger. Like, there's a lot more it's a lot bigger areas as far as kind of like what you're doing. It's bigger scales, bigger scopes. It's because I feel like we as a culture, like we want all of these bigger things.
Yeah.
And you look at like what like game shows like growing up, that another game show that I grew up on was Supermarket Sweep.
Oh, yes. Classic. Supermarket Sweep. You know how many times I would run through the supermarket? My mother's like, stop running. Grabbing like 9 pounds of beef.
But it's one of those things that like, it was just this like fun self-contained show, and like it was more intimate. And, like, most game shows had, you know, upwards of maybe 3 to 5 contestants at a time, whereas we kind of moved into the newer, this like the new millennium, and your contestants would increase, and you went from maybe having 3 to now having 9 or 10
or more,
and so or more, yeah, even. And you just kind of look at how we've developed kind of for so long, and it's just, it's incredible to kind of look and see how we've kind of progressed in this genre. But I feel like growing up, I grew up in the times of like Survivor and like American Idol, and those to me like aren't really game shows, but yet they are at the same time. And so it's like this like different formula, because look, Survivor is a game show, because you're essentially, you have this obstacle that you're trying to overcome, and once whoever makes it through, they win. Same with American Idol. You're going through this competition. It's a game show. But you look at, it's just different stakes. But you look at things like Press Your Luck or Family Feud. I'm surprised we haven't talked about that with Family Feud. I feel like is one of the most entertaining, was and still is one of the most entertaining shows. Like when you said, when you stayed home, you would watch
Price is Right.
For me, my growing up was always Family Feud.
Okay.
With now it's Steve Harvey. I cannot.
There's
remember.
Been 5 hosts for the Family Feud. Well, maybe 6, but mostly 5. And
Steve Harvey, the guy from Home Improvement.
Oh, Al. Richard Kahn.
Yes.
Yep. Louis Anderson.
That's the one I grew up on.
Okay. And, you know, that's another thing, too. That's like, you know, it's almost like you can tell what, like, how old someone is. Like, who's the host of Family Feud when you were young? Like me, I'm bordering Richard Dawson to Ray Combs. I was definitely Ray Combs growing up.
Well, I feel like I didn't really progress. All right, so, like, the reason I progressed towards like my introduction to game shows with you know, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, kind of talking about, was I knew Regis Philbin, and I knew him because my mom watched Live, so I was already familiar with him, and so I was like, oh, I want to see what he does this. And Weakest Link was out of curiosity, but the reason that I went with Louis Anderson was because of my friend Louis growing up.
Okay.
Like, I knew him. I really was a fan of that cartoon, and still to this day.
Oh, great cartoon, yeah.
Massively underrated.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you have, you know, to see him kind of being able to do it. And then I was familiar with Richard Kahn.
Kahn, yeah.
Kahn.
No, Kahn, yeah.
Richard Kahn from Home Improvement. Kahn. And, of course, I grew up with Steve Harvey. So, you know, these last few hosts, like, that's kind of, my introduction was out of familiarity.
And, you know, that's the other thing we can talk about, too, because with Louis Anderson, Richard Kahn, Steve Harvey, and I think, I don't remember, I don't know his real name, but Jay Peterman from Seinfeld, I think he may have hosted for a little while Family Feud. I know he hosted To Tell the Truth when it came back for a bit. But, and today, Alec Baldwin's hosting Match Game. Another celebrity's hosting, I think, Pyramid. Nowadays, like, you don't have those career game show hosts. You have celebrities now hosting. Yeah. And I'm like, that's like, I remember I wanted to be a game show host when I grew up.
And it's not even like, you know, big name celebrities. It's like kind of like celebrities that were
like on the bubble. Big, yeah.
Like 15, 20 years ago that, you know, like were massive stars in like the 80s and 90s. Now it's kind of like that's where you kind of go.
Exactly. You know, it's, you know, you don't have your Wink Martindales anymore. You don't have your, you know, Peter Tabarkins. You don't have, you know, your, you know, a lot of guys who were game show. That's what they were. They were game show hosts. You know, Alex Trebek hosted about 2 or 3 shows before he got to Jeopardy. famous show in the 70s called Tattletales. And then a show probably a little bit before that, which Bob Barker also hosted for a minute, called Truth or Consequences. So, and then that's starting to go back. And I remember, like, I literally, when I was younger, I told my parents, I want to be a game show host when I grow up. I remember making my, probably at the time, 80-something-year-old great-grandmother. I would, you know, hang out at my grandparents' house if my parents were working, I was off from school. And it was my great-grandmother. I must have been 5 or 6. And my grandparents had an oval-shaped picture in the living room, which happened to look like the board from Family Feud. And I would make my grandmother, I called her Grandma Drank the Water, because she always had a glass of water with her. God bless her. She would do this to me every time without complaining. I would play Family Feud with her. It was just me and her. But I would make this poor old woman get out of her chair. She can barely move to get into like the middle of the room to do like the face off on Family Feud. And she went with it every time. I look back on it. I should have been slapped or been told, stop doing this. And you know, I'd always point at the picture too, be like, show me potato. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and the answers. So that it was always that love of also being, you know what game shows also did? It also kind of made you, it gave you your 15 minutes of fame. And I think in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, before YouTube, before social media, before anybody can be celebrities, you know, we're trying to be celebrities, you know, kind of, sort of, you know, before this was easy, game shows got your name out there. And you were able to be, you know, when I was younger, I was on a show, not a game show, but I was on a kid show, Romper Room. And I remember being on that show. That was nationally syndicated. And I'm like, holy cow, I'm famous. No, I wasn't. But it was just cool to every now and again see a rerun and be like, hey, that's me. That's my episode. Same thing with game shows. You can see them, and every once in a while, they would pop back up. So I think that fame for back in the day when no one was getting it was a good way to get your 15 minutes.
I'm going to edit this out. Going to edit this out, because I'm looking for something very specific.
Welcome to my world.
Wow, this is incredible. Oh, okay, cool.
I could banter more. Back. Okay.
Go back. All right, so you talked about kids shows, and I feel like, you know, there's a little bit of a generational gap in between myself and you, but like, we grew up roughly around the same. Look, you're 10 years older than I am, okay? But I feel like at the same time, we also kind of had these similar things that we were introduced to. So you had Nickelodeon, which was kind of like pop culture for kids. You look at Saturday Night Live, would not have happened without Saturday Night Live.
Very true.
But then you also had you had game shows like Double Dare, Legends of the Hidden Temple, Figure It Out, Slime Time Live, and just
Nick Arcade.
To name a few.
Nick Arcade.
Yes, Nick Arcade.
God, I love Nick Arcade. Because I wanted to be in a game. That bonus round was awesome.
So good.
Arcade was based on another game called Starcade, which you can actually watch on Twitch. Shout Factory's page on Twitch, because they did a marathon of it. Starcade came out in the 80s, and it was kids who would answer questions about video games and then would go play an arcade cabinet video game, like to get the high score or whatever, to advance. You know, in the game show, it ran for a few seasons, I think. Kids' game shows are very underrated.
Wrong. Nick Arcade actually only ran for. Oh.
I'm talking Starcade, I think, ran. This show, Starcade, I'm talking about, may have ran for a couple seasons. How long was Nick Arcade?
A year.
Really? That's it? Holy cow.
Yeah, that's the thing about Nickelodeon shows is that Nickelodeon shows essentially don't run more than a couple years.
I'm shocked. Okay, it felt a lot longer than that.
Like, I think the longest lifespan of a Nickelodeon show is maybe 5 to 6 years.
And that's a good run.
Double Dare ran from 86 to 93, but it was also brought back in the new millennium under Double Dare 2000, and now it's back as a brand new series. Mm-hmm. Legends of the Hidden.
I was going to say, I was not a fan of Double Dare 2000. I was a fan of...
I didn't mind Double Dare 2000. Like, but I also didn't grow up on the original, so it was kind of like...
Totally get, like,
my introduction to it.
Because Mark Summers wasn't the host, right, of Double Dare 2000. It was some other guy. I don't think Mark Summers had anything to do with Double Dare 2000. I remember Double Dare. I remember when they upgraded it to Super Sloppy Double Dare. That was a fun one. And then at night, they would have, which at night I think may have been primetime, Family Double Dare. Like on actual regular TV, not Nickelodeon. I could be wrong on that part.
Mark Summers actually was the host of Double Dare 2000.
He was. Okay, I could have sworn it was someone else. Okay.
No, but like so you talked about, you know, Family Feud being that one show for you.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to so bad to be a part of, I always had this like weird, I feel like my generation just had this like weird obsession with wanting to get slimed. I don't know why.
Started in Canada. You can't do that on television.
Yes, it did. And like, if you check out one of the earliest episodes of PS Midnight Cast, like we talked about that. And but Double Dare, I feel like, was that really big introduction, especially like some of the, like the nose.
Pick
the
it.
Nose of the slimes, yes. And like they did a Bob's Burger episode all on it.
Oh,
like,
did they really?
Spoofing it. Yes.
Oh, wow.
If I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be a Double Dare spoof. But like Double Dare, I feel like, is one of those game shows that it's a part of a lot of people's childhoods, but they probably don't remember it. And it goes back to that also what you were saying being underrated.
I'm gonna politely disagree with you on that one with Double Dare. I think there's other game shows. So like I remember Legends of the Hidden Temple, but I can't tell you specifics about Legends of the Hidden Temple. You know, like moments or like I remember the bonus round was a big giant tiki statue, whatever, and they made the TV movie out of it and stuff. But Double Dare, I think the original stands the test of time. I mean, just think of how many obstacle courses you can possibly name. You know, I mean, Sunday Slide, the one-ton human hamster wheel, Picket, you know, the tank, which was something different every time. I think Double Dare definitely stands the test of time. I haven't watched the new one yet. You know how I am, you know, when it comes to nostalgia. Yeah. So, I mean, Mark Summers took over for Harvey as the announcer, so I'm not crazy about a new host, but it seems to have the love and support of the original Double Dare. So I'll watch it eventually. I remember wanting to be on Double. I remember ordering an official Double Dare t-shirt, like the ones the contestants wore. And I remember for a while I tell people, yeah, I was on Double Dare. Like, what episode? I'm like, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Another one growing up for me outside of Double Dare was Slime Time Live. And this was like a show that ran religiously on Nickelodeon from 4 to 4:30 every day. And it was essentially like you and a partner would have... Like, you go through questions, and, like, you wouldn't necessarily go through this obstacle course, but if you got the questions, you would get slimed. And it lasted 8 seasons, apparently.
Wow.
But, so it had some memorable stuff.
I don't remember Slime Time Live. I'll be honest.
It ran from 2000 to 2003.
That's probably why I don't remember it.
But I just remember being rushing home from school and,
I get
grabbing,
it.
Like... a juice box and being like, can't wait for this. And I'm pretty sure like me and my sister, like we would act like it. Like I was in FYE yesterday and they have like a Nickelodeon section. You can buy Nickelodeon brand slime.
Oh, cool.
I stared at it for like 5 minutes and I'm like, if I bring this home, my wife will just not, I will be sleeping on the couch until the slime is gone. But I stared at it for so long. And I'm like, I want to so bad.
Well, you got to remember, you got to clean up that slime. Because when I was younger, long story short, I had gotten the Ghostbusters headquarters for Christmas when I was young. And it came with a bucket of slime. And you were able to run the slime through the top of the tower and it would drip down, you know, sliming the inside of the headquarters, which it was supposed to do. which I did, and I didn't clean it, and it hardened, and it ruined the whole thing. This was like 2 days after Christmas. Oh boy. I was in Dutch at that point for a little while with my parents.
I always had this like fear, like as much as I wanted to be slimed, like I always had a fear of like what it must feel like once it gets into your underwear. I was like, what if you're wiping green for like a That's week weird. Afterwards? Well, like these are the things I thought about as a kid. No, I was like
I heard, not it's true on the old Double Dare, like for the stuff, like the not the slime, but the actual like on the Sunday slide and stuff you jump into, like the whipped cream, that was all like expired food. Like they didn't just buy new food and use it. It was expired or like day old, if you will. To me, that sounds disgusting because if that's going to get in your mouth, I can't even imagine what that could have been like. So
you go,
how far back, like, have you seen any like old, like from the 50s and the, like from like that era? Because they were on Game Show Network for a while when the Game Show Network first came out.
Probably.
Okay, those, I mean, Beat the Clock. The original Price is Right, which ran in the 40s or 50s, and it was a half-hour show, and it was only the bidding part. It wasn't the games in between. It was only the bidding part. You know, whose line is it anyway? What's My Line is what I'm trying to say. And, you know, shows like that, just very fun. And it was so weird because back then, first of all, everything was sponsored by cigarettes. You know, it'd be right, like, The Price is Right, brought to you by Laramie Cigarettes. You know, 9 out of 10 doctors say smoking is good for you. Try a Laramie. You know what I mean? And I remember watching one of these old episodes, and they would have the other gimmick that a lot of game shows did is you submit a postcard and you could win something from home. And this episode of The Price is Right did that, and they drew the card, and literally, and now of course I'm not going to get the name or the rest of it correct, but they'd be like, all right, and today's daily winner is Ms., you know, Edna Homebrow. It was always these older, like, grandmothers who were always sending in these cards. Edna Homebrow from 457 Fake Street, Secaucus, New Jersey, 08947. Like, they gave out the woman's entire address. But back then, that was okay. Like, no one was going to come to your house, you know, so it was normal. And it's just funny, just so funny to watch some of those old shows like Beat the Clock and everything. And, you know, just, oh, it's so, so funny. I remember I was watching one. And again, signs of the time, people, please keep that in mind. Someone came on the show. I think it was a woman came on the show, and she was like a doctor. And like all the guys were like, what? What are you talking about? This can't be true. Get off the stage. Something like that. Like, again, what it is what it is. One more little quip and then we can move on. There was a show called Celebrity Bowling. And again, it's on Amazon Prime. Terrible show. Literally, it is what it is. Celebrity Bowling. And the first episode, I can't remember the one team, but the other team was Frank Gorshin and his wife. Now, Frank Gorshin was the Riddler on the old Batman 66 TV show. And this show, mid-70s. And it's just weird. Both bowlers would bowl. They share the frame. And I remember Frank Gorshin, every time his wife would, like, bowl a gutter, he would just be like, look at her. Like, why? Why are you here? Could have kept you home. It was just weird because they aired it on TV and everyone in the audience, male, female, young and old, all found it funny. It's just, awesome. It's weird, uncomfortable almost knowing today's society, but it's fun to watch.
Right. So we actually reached out to some people on social media and asked them what their favorite game shows were. And some of these I've heard of, some of them I haven't, okay. Some of them we've already talked about. But Sean Davis, who actually used to be one of the hosts here on Victims and Villains, The Wonder, actually said this show that I've never heard of. And curious if you've ever heard of it. It's called Bob's Big Show. But that is actually the edited version.
Oh, I think I know what he's talking about. That rings a bell with me.
It ran. It only ran on FX in 1998, and I think it only lasted one season. But it was composed of three elements to the show. You had the first round was contestants were playing three games, mostly based on Truth or Dare. Yeah, two contestants that participated in each game. The winner of the game, as determined by the audience applause, so kind of like drop the mic on TBS, mm-hmm. so you would kind of get the audience reaction, would become one of the finalists in the final round. The three losers of each game, as well as two losers of the final round, collectively referred to in show as the Big A Losers, were subject to humiliation backstage. One example of a stunt involved toy animals, and it went up to the contestant to act out getting chomped by the animal in the face. The stunt's name was referred to When Animals Attack.
That's weird. I think I remember hearing about it. I never watched it.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it. So, like, I can say, also, we'll have links in the descriptions below for, like, videos.
Yeah.
But the second part of the show was involved three winners of each game, with each contestant begging and pleading the audience why he or she wanted to go on the big grand prize vacation. They begged for 6 seconds, and after each contestant had finished pleading, the audience cheered depending on how well each contestant did. The one with the most enthusiastic response went on to the bonus round, and the bonus round was called Guess My Secret. And they had a steel gray helmet lowered onto his or her face, where five losers of the show told Bobcat three secrets, one of which was true, and it was up to the audience and Bobcat to guess.
Bobcat Goldthwait was the host?
Yes.
That is a fantastic.
So it was, you had, to be basically two truths and a lie.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like, yeah.
Oh my, this just sounds like bizarre and like extremely... humiliating.
Yeah, see, that's where it gets a little too much. And that, you know what, that was the late 90s, though. That, you know, late 90s was like that, you know, Jackass and all that. You know, kind of like Remote Control was like that on MTV. Remember Remote Control? Like the bonus round, you got strapped to a wheel and you spun around answering questions or whatever. You know, it was a little weird. Not as extreme as that show, but I'll have to check that out on YouTube.
Next one is called, this comes from Dale White, from our friends over at Geek Devotions. This is Super Password.
Oh, classic. That whole series. Password, Super
I don't
Password.
Remember that one.
You don't remember Super Password? Oh, man, yes. With Bert Convy was the host. And, you know, kind of from Cable Guy. You know, the password is, just not as graphic. And you would have the celebrities team with a contestant, and that they would just go back and forth. And you know, shows like that always had their regulars. Like I remember Betty White, I think, was always on, well, she was always on all those shows, but she was on Super Password a lot. That was a good class. That was a classic one. I remember that.
And so the last one that I got actually comes from Francisco Ruiz over at Retro Rewind Podcast. This is another Nickelodeon show called Global Guts.
Oh, Guts, which eventually became Global Guts, with the big aggro crag at the end of the show.
See, I don't remember this.
Remember that? It was like American Gladiators for kids.
Okay.
And, what was the guy's, the host? I'm trying to remember his name. And I remember the announcer.
Mike O'Malley.
Yes.
I remember. Okay, I remember it now.
And the female announcer, I think her name was like Sid, because she was from Australia. I remember she was
British.
Oh, British.
Her
okay.
name was Moira Mokor.
Mo. I knew it was like a guy's name. I knew it was some weird guy's name. All right. I was young. I didn't know Australian, whatever, you know, Australia was England's jail. So come on, close enough. And
was.
That's fact. It was a penal colony from the British back in the day. Well, that's history, folks. Big aggro crag at the end of the show. I remember that thing. That thing was awesome.
What was all right? So we've talked about game shows we grew up on. We talked about game shows listeners grew up on that they remembered and that was their favorite. And we've talked about cultural influence. But I'm kind of curious if you know what the first game show of all time is.
Ooh. First game show of all time.
And just to clarify, there are technically two answers for this.
Now, see, now the problem is, do we go radio or do we go television?
Television.
Okay, all right. I'm just trying to think. The earliest game show I know of, only because it was on the Honeymooners, was the 64, was it $64,000 question or something like that? But I don't think that's the answer. But I'm gonna say $64,000 question.
You actually have said it in this show before. We've actually already talked about it.
Price is Right.
No.
God damn.
So the first game show that ever was on the air was actually Spelling Bee in 1938.
Wow.
The first game show to ever air commercially licensed on television is actually Truth or Consequences, 1941.
Oh, wow. I didn't... Okay. Okay, I can see that with what's his face? Hosting, yeah. Okay, cool. I had no idea. That's pretty wild.
And my follow-up, my last question, follow-up, do you know what daytime shows originally were, the audience that they were aimed for?
I'm guessing, like Housewives.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Stay-at-home Housewives. Yep. They were given to be played at lower stakes for game shows for stay-at-home Housewives, which, again, is... that brings in, and I would feel that, like, kind of like culturally standing, you look at kind of those shows, and we talked about it enough tonight, where it's the very much a time capsule of everything, and you kind of look at how we've, you know, started out kind of aiming for these Housewives, but kind of how it's captured a fever for families, because, you know, game shows, I feel like, for the most part, depending on, I wouldn't, maybe not today's, but, like, you know, like 90s downwards, they much very much family programming that you could sit down and just, you know, you didn't have to worry about vulgarity or sex or violence.
Yeah, you're right,
it was just a family, it was just good old-fashioned family programming with, you know, for the most part.
Yeah, you'd have your, innuendos or your double entendres every now and again. But you're right. For the most part, it was just you get on stage, you answer some questions. Card sharks is a classic. You just get up there and, you know, high, low. You know, that's pretty much about it. It was a lot of it was family oriented, family friend, you know, family friendly. And I, you know, kind of one of my last bits here is how a lot of the game shows as well, you know, today's day and age, again, I can't really name that many original game shows now, but from the 80s and 90s, each one of them, like, you just, they all had their catchphrase. Catchphrase was also a game show, but they all had, like, their own catchphrase. You know, some of my favorite, you know, No Whammies, No Whammies, Stop, Joker's Wild, not the new one with Snoop Dogg, but the old one, Joker, Joker, Joker. Oh, I love that show. Big Giant Jackpot, One-Armed Bandit. And that, yeah, it was all family oriented. That's what it was. It was meant to be, you know, they always said, thank you for letting us into your homes, you know, for this week's episode or whatever. And it was wholesome. It was fun. It was innocent, and you can always play at home. And definitely, if you get a chance, check out Amazon Prime with the game shows. Check out the Wink Martindale page on YouTube, because there's a lot of cool game shows, just pilots that never made it to air. And it also has one of the dumbest names for a game show ever. And the game was called Whoosh.
See, I don't, that this is like a whole other area of conversation I feel like we could probably get into really quick. I don't know how you don't get past the censors or past pilot for some of these shows. So what are some of these shows that don't get past pilot? Because we have some dumb game shows that exist and that have existed.
Because they were producing them like Tic Tacs. They were coming out left and right. And like this one show was called, literally, it was called Whoosh. And this poor host, I forgot the host's name. He would like, and he's hosted other shows. Like, hey, welcome to this week's episode of Whoosh. And this week on Whoosh, we're going to have the contestants. And I still don't Whoosh. Get, no, really, that's what it was. W-O-S-H. Whoosh. Some other shows, they had this game called Majority Rules. I think Mark Summers may have hosted it, where it was literally Majority Rules. You know, you ask a question, the audience votes, and it slowly whittles it down. You know, some other games, it was versions of Scrabble that I saw on there as pilots. There was a couple of dice games were just running rampant in the late 70s. High Rollers made it to air. And I can't remember some of the other ones, but there was just a lot of dice rolling games. These giant dice look like the ones that hang from the rearview mirror back in the day. You just kind of roll them down. There was another one that almost looked like a live action, not Candyland, but there was like a board that you would run around and you had to roll the dice, again, another dice game, to keep moving around the board. So there was a lot of just odd.
Well, I'm going to say, fun fact before you go on, there actually is a Candyland currently game show on. I don't know if it's like still on the air.
Is it that Family Game Night?
No, it's actually called Candy Crush.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, you all right? I'll start to wrap it up with this. Two of the coolest things I remember: summer of 89, because I think it was the same year The Simpsons debuted. There were two summer specials. I remember the biggest thing back then was the summer special. Like, they'd have the $1 million Price is Right summer special, where it was prime time Price is Right. Or they would have some of these other game shows that normally air at like 10 o'clock in the morning. They're on at 8 o'clock at night doing like, you know, Military Appreciation Week or something like that. But they did two. They were back to back. It was Scrabble, which did eventually become its own game anyway. But it was like a special version of Scrabble, and Monopoly. Now, I know there was a recent Monopoly game show with Mike from Mike and Molly, but this, you got to look it up. It's got one of the catchiest theme songs next to the Ropers that has one of the best theme songs. And it's just like, you know, you roll the dice, you move around the board, blah, blah, blah. And then the catch would be like, what is it? It would be like M-O-N-O. P-O-L-Y, Monopoly, 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 Monopoly. It was so catchy. It was a giant Monopoly board. It just ran around the board. I remember watching those during the summer, and I'm like, this thing is awesome. So.
How do you take a game like Monopoly and make it into a game show?
Oof, all right. How did it get? Basically, just you roll the dice, again, rolling dice. You make it to the board, and then you have to, I think, answer a question to get the property. And then I think with the money you earn, and then it turns into basically the board game. I think then you can build houses and hotels. And I think if someone lands on it, they have to answer like a tougher question or something like that. If I remember correctly, we're talking 89 or 90 when this thing came out. So it's been a little while. I've been hitting the head a few too many times. But I just, the only thing I remember is the theme song.
All right. Well, if you guys are suicide plug gets recorded earlier in the show and move that in there. All right. If you guys like what you guys hear, and well,
three.
Hey, third time's the charm.
That's
right?
All right.
All right. Well, what is your favorite game show? Let us know. Comment below. Go to...
we'll put these on the bloopers and practical jokes.
What's your favorite game show? Let us know at facebook.com/victimsandvillains. Tweet to us on Twitter at victimsandvillains. Or simply leave a comment below on this link, whether it's on our official page, victimsandvillains.net, or... Blog Talk Radio. But if you guys like what you guys hear, make sure that you guys leave us a 5-star written review on iTunes. You guys can follow us, like us, and subscribe to us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, iTunes, and YouTube. But where can people find you online, sir?
You can find me everywhere, pretty much social media at More365, M-O-H-R-365, and of course the podcasts. Wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Amazon Echo, we're going to be on Spotify very shortly. The Retro Gamers podcast, we're about to hit 100 episodes. Well, actually, by the time you hear this, we're already way beyond 100. The Retro Gamers podcast, the Better Half podcast, the Yin and the Yang podcast. Who knows what else I feel like doing? Probably some other podcast. And you just, again, search on Facebook, search on Twitter, Instagram, and you'll definitely find us and wherever you listen to podcasts. And one final thing I'd like to say is when he listens to this, he's going to be very upset because Anthony Rippo, the other half of the Retro Gamers, has been on at least two game shows. When he moved out to L.A., he needed to make some cash quick. He was doing it by being on game shows. He was in the mob on One Versus 100. He got out on a, which I still bust chops for, on a Sex Pistols question. And he was on some other Game Show Network original show where he won. He won $5,000. But the best part about it is there was a question like, what drink is flammable and usually used like in protests? Molotov cocktail. Of course, he answered Motolov cocktail and got it wrong. So that was funny when we were all watching it. So the two things we bust his chops for. But he's been on a few game shows. He was even on Millionaire, like not the actual seat, the hot seat, but like kind of a quick audience participation thing. So he'll be upset when he hears this. Oh, well.
All right. Well, until next time, remember to keep socking nerds, socking hope, and speaking nothing else, and keep spinning for that Wheel of Fortune and that lucky Millionaire Prize. We'll be right back.